So I'm going to take advantage of the fact that several of the other presenters have kind of laid the groundwork for what is team science. And what I want to do is jump right into a study published a few years ago by a colleague, Sarah Kiesler, and myself on multi-university collaborations. And I want to start off by saying that we were initially interested in interdisciplinary collaborations. So NSF had a program called Information Technology Research that funded interdisciplinary projects between computer science and other disciplines, biology, like computational biology, or physics, computer science and physics, or chemistry, and so on. And as we got into the discussions and interviews and PI meetings and then eventually survey data, we found that, in fact, it wasn't the interdisciplinary challenges that came up that really posed problems for these people, but it was the inter-university or inter-institution activities that pose problems. And one of the main reasons that comes up, as you may imagine, is that every university does not have all the expertise that you need locally. So if you want to form an interdisciplinary team at your university, you may not have all the right experts available to you. And so as a result, you start to go outside the boundaries of the university. And so we drew on a theory called the knowledge-based view of the firm and applied it to science. And the knowledge-based view of the firm, if you're a company and you're producing some product and you need to go on and make a new product, you can either buy another firm or acquire outside that knowledge and bring it in, or you can make it. And so you often hear in business lingo this make versus buy decision. Well, universities have make versus buy decisions as well. They can make and generate and hire people who are going to work on these types of problems that they're interested in, or they can go and buy and hire someone out from a different university. And so if you're a team scientist and you're looking to put together a science project, you also have a make or buy decision. You can go locally and kind of try to groom somebody, maybe a junior faculty or someone else who hasn't gone through all the trials and tribulations of this kind of team research, or you can go outside the university and ask somebody to join your project from the outside. So all this to say is that multi-university projects are more and more prevalent, not because people want them, but rather because people almost have to have them. They have to get the expertise they need to solve problems, and so they often have to go outside of their local university to get it. And so this summary of this particular paper, the citation is at the top in Research Policy in 2007, found a strong negative correlation between the more projects that had universities. So a good example is if you had five universities versus if you had a single university, you are less likely at the end of the project to report publications, patents, software tools development, students getting trained. You are less likely to leverage those results for a follow-up grant. So a whole host of quote-unquote negative outcomes as a result of increasing number of universities on the project. And just for those of you who care, the correlation between the number of disciplines on the project and the number of universities was about 0.3. which supports our earlier argument that, in fact, people are creating these multi-university projects because of their need for different disciplines at different universities. And so when we explored further, down here you'll see two mediating factors. So at a high level, mediation analysis says you have some direct effect between the independent variable, number of universities, and the dependent variable, project outcomes. And so that relationship is negative. A mediation analysis says, well, what factors explain or kind of give you insight into that negative relationship. And so we identified two forms of coordination, division of responsibilities and knowledge transfer. Division of responsibilities occur in these projects, as Joanne and others talked about, where you'll get some money and you need to divide it up among your PIs. And so you often give it to a PI at each institution or a PI at each discipline. And then they in turn spend the money, maybe a summer salary for themselves and a PhD student or a postdoc or however they spend the money. And so division of responsibilities, as you do more of these subgroups, as you do more of these tasks being divided up to have multiple parts that at the end of the project you bring back together, those types of things are really good for outcomes. So if you have more subgroups working on tasks, if you have more grad students advising projects, if you have more postdocs who are working with the grad students to solve problems, on average you're going to have things like publications and patents and students getting jobs and follow-on research. But what happens is if you have more and more universities, you're less likely to do these good things like divide up the work in a way that allows you to capitalize on the synergies or the interdependencies among the projects. What happens is if you're at more and more universities, you divide things up, but they stay independent of one another. There's not as much integration, there's not as much exchange and transfer and people really solving the problems in a more synthetic way. They're doing it independently. And so the first mediation shows that you have more universities, you're less likely to divide up these task responsibilities and have grad students and postdocs working on the projects. And those things in turn are positive related to outcomes. And so this dotted line among the top there basically says when you put the division of responsibilities in the model, the direct effect disappears. So number of universities is no longer correlated or associated with the number of outcomes. And so that was the first way that we found that projects were able to overcome or surmount some of these university differences. The second thing we focused on that again was supported in this mediation analysis is called knowledge transfer. So knowledge transfer includes things like me sending my student to your university to spend a semester in the lab, or holding a workshop or a conference or a meeting where everybody comes together and presents results. Knowledge transfer also includes things like conference calls and meetings and ways for people in the project to report status updates and so on. So the same logic applies that applied to division of responsibilities. The more of these knowledge transfer activities, the more workshops and conferences and students exchanged and having these meetings where everybody reports out what they did and have debate and discussion, those things are associated with publications and patents and software tools and getting new grants. And so when you include knowledge transfer into the model where number of universities predicts outcomes, you again see a dotted line, which indicates mediation. So division of responsibilities and knowledge transfer are two factors that help explain or give you insight into why having more universities is related to more outcomes. So as a summary of our main kind of model is that this problem of having universities is an unintended consequence oftentimes of having interdisciplinary research. It's not something that people often prefer to do on their own. And so here's where I'm trying to kind of contribute or spark discussion for the question and answer afterwards. Is our theoretical mechanisms, the reasons why we thought that having more universities would harm this coordination, division of responsibilities, knowledge and transfer that's linked to outcomes, is because of geographic differences. And so here, for those of you who aren't in areas of organizational behavior or social psychology or even sociology, here are some citations that are in that original citation that I had on the first slide that explain why having collaborators or team members at multiple universities causes problems. And just to give you a few. So in an early classic study by Tom Allen at MIT found that if you had more locations or if you had people at different sites on a campus, you had less informal communication, less spontaneous bumping into each other at the water cooler, less likely to see you at lunch and those types of things. So less informal communication is again a positive. Informal communication is positive, but less informal communication is negative. Clark and Brennan in communication and cognitive psychology find that when people are in different locations or they're separated by distance, there's less common ground. Common ground is kind of like this mutual understanding where I know what you're thinking and you know what I'm thinking and I have an understanding of the context you're in and you understand the context that I'm in. And so this common ground eases communication among people. But if you're in different locations and you can't see each other, it's harder to have common ground around your task. Susie Wiseman in a study of task awareness found that if people are separated by geography, that you don't have a sense of what people are doing with their task, where are they, what are the things that they're concerned about. Even social issues come up when you're at a distance. So you don't know, why am I not replying to your email? Is it because I'm busy? Is it because I have other projects? Is it because I just don't care what you're doing? I mean, there's lots of things that go into awareness that make geography more problematic. Jim Herbstledt in the area of software development has found that as you have more sites where you're developing software, there's greater delay across those sites. So my handoff of code to you, integrating code that's been developed in different locations and so on. Catherine Crampton in a nice study of student teams in a business setting was interested in these communication breakdowns that people have. So Crampton found that as you're separated by geography, you are kind of less aware of the timing of information, like when should I send you something? You're less likely to interpret silence in a positive way. Again, why do you not reply to somebody? Another misunderstanding that people have is understanding the context of calendars and holidays, and maybe you're out of town, and maybe your school is doing a retreat away, and all these things that you can't know about when someone's at a different location. And then finally, some of Gloria Mark's work that was mentioned earlier finds that people in different locations really have to attend to their local distractions. It's hard to manage attention when you're local, and it's even harder when you're at a distance. And so people that are working on these distributed teams really do succumb to local distractions. So informal communication, common ground, awareness, delays, misunderstanding, distractions, these are all mechanisms that explain why geographic differences impact how people are working together. And for Sarah Kiesler and myself, this is really where we were initially drawn as the kind of causal explanation. But more recently, to talk about current work, we're actually moving it up a level of analysis, and we're interested not only within the project how these geographic differences affect people, but at the institutional level. How is it that being at a different institution impacts your ability to coordinate work? And so this last slide, which I'll wrap up with, gives you some of these nuanced reasons why working at different universities or different institutions can undermine your ability to coordinate effectively. And so what's interesting about these institutional differences is it kind of moves the blame away from the researchers themselves. So one of the complaints that we got oftentimes from the early set of findings was that basically we're accusing researchers on these multiple university teams of not working hard enough, of not solving these problems of common ground and not being aware of one another, and they're not doing enough as though the researchers themselves are at fault for poor outcomes. And so by raising it to the institutional level, these are things that are exogenous to a particular researcher. These are things almost outside of their control. So if I'm working with a collaborator, for example, Sarah at CMU, she's going to have a very different list of A-list journals in a human-computer interaction department than I would have in an organizations department in a business school. In terms of publication authorship, we heard about in some disciplines, the leader of the lab goes last on the publication. In other disciplines like ours, in social science, oftentimes the first author is the person who did most of the work. Some areas, the PhD student is always put first. So depending on your department and where you're located, it's going to impact this. In terms of promotion, if you're in a very disciplinary-oriented university, unlike the example of Arizona State earlier, your promotion and tenure is going to depend heavily on publishing in disciplinary journals. But if you're teamed up with a co-author at another university who really does value the interdisciplinary outlets, then you're going to have a tension there about how to get promoted and rewarded and so on. Teaching schedules, so if I teach on a quarter system, so I get teaching in a kind of two-month chunks. Sarah gets teaching in a full semester, so a four-month chunk. So when you have quarter system versus semester system, you now have tensions in when can we set up meetings, when can we have conference calls, when are we going to actually have time to visit one another and do our work. Teaching load varies tremendously across institutions. So if you're at an institution where you're teaching, I don't know, a four or five course load versus institution where you're doing a two or three course load, those institutional differences are going to impact your ability to work together. Grant writing, some universities privilege writing grants and getting external funding, other universities value that less. PhD student funding, some universities your RA-ship is covered out of your grant, whereas at other universities the RA is covered out of the overhead that the university brings in. IRB procedures vary quite a bit. Some universities, people will get feedback in a week or 2 weeks. Other universities, you have to wait a month or 2 months to get feedback. So if you're in a multi-university project, you're dependent on the local IRB system that you have. IP agreements, so licensing and patenting. Some tax transfer offices are kind of very, overly worried about IP slipping out, and so they want to monitor everything and get reports on everything and vet everything with the lawyers, whereas other universities are more lax or lenient on that. And then finally, available funds. There's a lot of variation across institutions in overhead rates. There's variation in kickbacks, so some faculty get X percent of the overhead that comes. Other faculty get 0% of that kickback, and so as a result, you're able to do less with your local resources. So these are institutional differences that arise that are independent of the researchers and team science doing their work. And so I think for policymakers, university administrators, people that are helping to facilitate and support these types of projects, these are some of the issues that you should be concerned about in addition to these more established mechanisms. So with that, I'll wrap up. Thank you.